Checking in again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another virtual chat about state, city, local issues. Hey, Tacky, nice to see you again.
Hey, Joe, good to see you and another Tuesday together, lunchtime. Next time you have to bring lunch.
All right, a virtual enchiladas coming up next time. This would be instead of Tuesdays with Maury, this Tuesdays with Tacky.
That's exactly it. I mean, it's for the audience. We do these at noontime on Tuesdays, so you know we should do 5 minutes of what we're going to make for lunch today.
For me, it's a boring turkey sandwich. I don't know about you.
Peanut butter and toast.
There you go.
I'm into cooking food right now, but it is multigrain. I do eating my high fiber multigrain toast too.
Healthy peanut butter and jelly. Very good.
Exactly. Not too much white bread for me. Try to keep off the simple carbohydrates.
So, well, one thing that has changed since last we chatted is there is now a phased reopening plan. The governor's big announcement yesterday on how to do it. What did you think?
We've been getting some warnings, well, not really warnings per se, some insights last week from the Secretary Keneally regarding how the process he's associated with it. And the warning really was, someone's going to be unhappy, and someone is going to be happy, and some's going to say it's fast, and is going to say it's going to be too slow. And that is completely 100% accurate. So, I mean, I'm talking to various industry folks that my committee oversees, and you know, people are expressing that how come one can go first and other can't, and also some apprehension, even those who are interested in opening up, apprehension about their own openings to ensure the safety of the employees and their customers, because if we have COVID-19 customers, that's a problem. And obviously you have COVID-19 employees, you can't get work done. So while a lot of the business community that speaks to me are very interested in opening sooner than later, they do so with an abundance of caution. They are taking this extremely seriously, because if you have six sick consumers, you have no consumers. If you have sick employees, you have no workforce. So there is this real situation where people want to open, they're advocating public and want to open, but also at the same time, very cautious about this issue. And it doesn't matter if it's a small business of three people or a big business of 500 people. They're all in kind of the same position trying to figure this out. So we're going to start off with construction, manufacturing, and places of worship. The state of emergency is still on. Let's make this clear. The governor did not declare the end of the state of emergency. He does have all essential services, construction, manufacturing, and places of worship to open this week. Today's the 19th of May, so he announced this yesterday, the 18th. And then starting next week, on the 25th, smaller retail can do curbside pickup, online orders, car washes are open, hair salons and hair cutters are open for appointments only, and you still have to do social distancing, meaning you can't do crowds of greater than 10 people in any location. So, you know, that stuff is coming up, as well as activating the open spaces such as beaches and parks and those things. But yet again, the social distancing still applies. So I think some people are going to have this misconception that state emergency over. It is not. Not every business is open. It is not. And the provisions regarding face masks are still in place. So no gatherings bigger than 10 is still in place. So and the stay-at-home advisory is still in place. There is a lot of advice regarding people age 65 and above, immune compromised, or have other underlying illnesses, to try to not go out as much as possible. And this is also a workplace concern for many employers. I think people tend to forget that you can have a friend who does have cancer or severe health problems. Does not mean they cannot go to work. They do go to work. But now the workplace can become hazardous, as well as if you're facing customer business and you have a health condition, that can become hazardous too. So employers and employees and consumers, you know, should all be very concerned, not just for their own safety, but the potential danger you can present to the safety of others. And protocols are being put in place. And DPH is putting out guidelines as well as a checklist for every employer. So for example, when you go back to KOETV, you will get a checklist. And it's self-certification. and you have to post information on your windows as well as in employee areas about COVID-19, like washing your hands and, you know, what your checklist looks like, to create consumer confidence that's okay to go in and employer confidence can go in. If there's a complaint, the local Board of Health will enforce. So people should report if they do not feel safe and do not feel the compliance. And the Board of Health will confirm whether or not the self-checklist is correct. So, I mean, as I like to say, you know, we have the whole no shirt, no shoe service. So no shirt, no shoes, no service. So, I mean, it's not really no shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service. And I fully anticipate customers being irate about the fact that being told how they come into a building. But think about this. If you wear no shirt and you get no service and you're upset about wearing a mask, I have a huge logic hole in that. So people need to be considerate of other people and not think about themselves. And I think that that needs to be a message that's re-emphasized.
I think what's going to happen is you're going to see, again, we had the, you know, see something, say something right after 9/11. I think you're going to see things like that again, where people, if people are non-compliant, there's going to be self-reporting done to your local Board of Health to try and, you know, correct that.
Absolutely. And we've seen with Ruth Jones, who does a tremendous job in Quincy, regarding the Walmart situation. I mean, they were in there quick. The team went in quick. They shut the place down. They did inspections. They have been monitoring the situation. But again, there's only so much the Board of Health can do. It's not like they're sitting in the room, the break room with an employee entry point, you know, watching that all the time. I mean, it is dependent on all of us to be vigilant on this issue. It's not to hurt anybody. I think people have this misconception. I don't want to say anything because I'm hurting somebody. You're going to hurt yourself, your loved ones, and everyone's around you because of the nature of the disease. So, you know, it's not like you're going to go sit there and shut your business down. They want to make sure everybody is safe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people in the business community I talk to share that same concern. Now, it's also important for their employees and also their consumers to feel safe too. And, you know, we've been talking about this every week about personal responsibility. It really is. If people want to talk about their civil liberties and take personal responsibility to preserve your civil liberties.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean to argue against people saying you're taking something away. Well, you know, if you cause someone to get sick and you want to take responsibility for it and trace it back to your other cause, how much responsibility will you take for being the cause of someone being sick?
Yeah.
And I ask everybody who listens to think about that for 1 second. Will you take personal responsibility because you refuse to try to ensure good hygiene, wearing a mask, social distancing, being polite to others, being understanding and patient? Will you take that responsibility? And the governor is far too polite in his press conferences, as you guys are telling. I've been out of office since March 16th, and same as everyone trapped in a home since March 23rd. So my patience is finished.
You know what I'm curious about?
At least in the issue of personal responsibility, my patience is finished on that.
Sure. Yeah. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Curious when this, you know, I won't say goes away, but when there's kind of a new normal that, you know, eventually develops as the governor's plan, do nursing homes and assisted living facilities, do you think, need to be looked at closer? It just seems like that there was an inordinate amount of sickness and death in those facilities. And I don't know if there's state mandates that can step in and correct that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Joint Committee of Elder Affairs has been charged by the Speaker's office and the President's office to look into the nursing home situation. That is a move to the very top of the legislature's investigation list. I am very aware that the Secretary of Health and Services, Secretary Sutter's and her team, as part of also COVID Command, is looking at the nursing homes. We did do financial incentives for them to get into better compliance. Some, I won't say which ones, but a small number of them are still not in compliance regarding even with financial incentives that we put out there. Nursing homes have been asking us for years to improve pay for their staff. Yeah. People don't realize that they're direct assistance from the state as well as Medicare programs. And the Medicare reimbursement on the federal government has not been good for nursing homes. They've not kept up with the cost of business. And the state share of Medicare is 50-50. So we need the federal government to provide an increase on that side so we can provide our 50%. But the legislature has taken action last year to provide more money outside of Medicare, strictly for increased payroll. So people who visit nursing homes or assisted living facilities or home care situations, it's not hospice, but the long-term stay residents, a lot of those folks are working just barely at minimum wage with minimal benefits.
Yes. I mean,
you can actually get better pay at McDonald's.
Yes.
And some of these folks have to work more than one job. And many of them are immigrants as well. So you got this workforce composed of many people who are immigrants, many people who are working at just above minimum wage or barely minimum wage, who has to work a second job to make life work. And some of these companies have gotten lax in their training. And we need to do something about that. And of course, some of these companies are multi-state conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
And Medicare is guaranteed income, but you have to use it properly. So we are investigating that, and we'll see what the Committee on Veterans Affairs has to report. But this is not an issue that's going to go away.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And, you know, a thought that I had through all this was the field hospitals that were open across the state, you know, perhaps use those to thin the populations out in the nursing homes just to increase social distancing.
Yeah, that's a good point. The field hospitals have been very, very effective on non-severe COVID patients. Thankfully, they have not been filled to capacity. They've been relatively low capacity use. And we're utilizing facilities that unfortunately are not being utilized, the convention centers. And pretty much conventions are going to be canceled for the rest of the year, which is a huge revenue problem to our economy and also to the state and private entities regarding their businesses. So that's actually a thought that we could move certain folks in there while we deal with the COVID situation. The state does require, you know, COVID wings if you can put one together
mm-hmm.
in a nursing home. And also they have also reactivated old nursing homes that were shuttered in the state and moved them, if they can, safely to those COVID nursing homes. They're all overseen by DPH staff who, you know, I remind folks, state employees out there on front lines, they're administrators, they're not all healthcare workers.
Right.
To ensure compliance. And I suppose we have to look at all options regarding these temporary situations for the safety of people in nursing facilities.
Sure. Jack, I spoke with the mayor this morning, and he is assuming that the Student Opportunity Act that was passed by the legislature will probably not come to realization this year. That means about $6.5 million lost to Quincy Public Schools. Is that kind of a valid assumption, do you think?
Well, it's not really a loss if you never got it.
Okay.
So let's put it that way. If you never received it, you never lost it. So we put together a landmark law that, you know, before my time, you know, well past 30 years, to increase funding from the state directly to local and city school systems. And this was done because of Proposition 2.5. But those in the listening audience that actually were around for Prop 2.5, because I was far too young, it limits how much revenue a city can take in, a town can take in on property taxes to 2.5% of its of budget based on last year. So it's not 2.5% of your property taxes, 200% of total budget that can be raised and then redistributed based on value of your homes and other factors. So that is why the state has local aid. And that's where your state income tax dollars, your state lottery dollars, is going back to cities and towns. So we changed the funding formula last year to hold people harmless, address special education, you know, address things like busing, address rural community access to education. You know, obviously, we live in the city, it doesn't affect us the same way, but if you live in rural communities, education access is very different. And of course, increase funding to reflect, you know, the modern needs. And it's like $1 billion. I mean, it's very significant. And we're going to have to like readjust our budget going to next year. The mayor is correct. And we have the same concern about whether we can meet all our current funding costs for FY21, much less new spending.
Right.
And there is going to be new spending. Medicaid is going to be increasing. As people are not able to find work, there'll be more Medicaid payments. Food assistance programs. People are out of work. The food pantries are very busy. Social programs are going to need more money for food assistance. Those are just two of a whole lot of other examples that's going to be coming up. The state's going to have to make hard choices of prioritizing services directly to people in need. You know, you may not think you need it, and you may have, and that's probably great. And you got friends next door, you may not realize they need it because it's not like people publicly advertise they need state services.
No.
You know, we need to get them help because these are going to be first-time people looking for assistance. The majority of people in a bad economy are first-time assistance requesters. So, you know, we're looking between a $4 and $6 billion shortfall in FY21.
Mm-hmm.
At least there's a federal assistance program to provide more funds for not the current fiscal cycle, but next fiscal cycle to address budget shortfalls and not just COVID-19 related. And that's a big part of it. Lottery revenues are down because the bars aren't open. So Keno's taking a huge hit. So that's part of it too. And people ask, do you want to expand lottery to online and other sources? And I have the attitude that people are having a tough time now. I would not want to encourage people to spend money on lottery, even though it goes to your cities and towns from your home. It does affect a very low-end socioeconomic scale. It isn't the very wealthy that play the lottery.
Right.
And the people to me, it's like, oh, we're going to spend money on it anyway. Yeah, but it isn't like it's going to be all the lottery people playing that used to play Keno and now shifted to online Keno. Gambling is a preferential hobby. People do not change their gambling habits just to gamble unless you're an addict. People generally like to play a game because they enjoy the game, not because they're addicted to the game. So I think people have this misconception about that. It's like saying that I like all beer. No, people don't like all beer. They like specific brands, they like specific flavors. Gambling is the same principle. Unless you're a severe addict, people have their preferences. So, you know, it doesn't translate one for one.
Sure. Do you think like the mayor and other leaders can count on at least level local aid funding?
It's too early for me to commit anything.
Okay.
We would like to hope to make level funding for FY20, which actually was very generous from FY19.
Yeah.
We've been increasing local aid every year for basically the last 7 or 8 years. Since the economy turned around. And the lottery has been having record sales every year. We're probably the second or third biggest lottery in the country. Excise taxes have been very good. Capital gains does not go to the bottom line budget. Capital gains goes to rainy day fund. Most people realize when you sell a home or you're selling your stocks with dividends, that does not go to the bottom line budget. It goes to rainy day. So our rainy days are $3.5 billion. Obviously, that's not enough to cover a $4 billion shortfall for FY21 in one sweep. But that's where your capital gains money's been going. So, you know, we are going to have a tough time trying to figure this out. As a result, it's very hard to make any kind of commitment to any entity or the city regarding exactly how much financial assistance we can provide.
Sure. The mayor also suggested possibly there might be some change to the pension requirements to ease up the financial strain on local communities, maybe extend them out a little further or at least, you know, put them on the back end of the payment schedule rather than the front end. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, we're talking about the pension liability.
Right.
So most of the towns, the county and the state and even private businesses have a pension liability. When it comes to government pensions, it is funded by employees. Let's make it very clear. There's not been a non-public funded pension since World War I veterans.
Okay.
Last time it was 100% taxpayer funded pensions was when you were a World War I veteran. There are probably no World War I public employee veterans left. So, you know, we've been increasing public employee contributions to the pension fund since the 70s. And new employees play a higher percentage than I do into the pension fund to try to help keep it solvent. The insolvency issues with pension fund and lottery comes from the same way the federal government treats Social Security. Mm-hmm. Long before my time, as opposed to raising taxes, they take loans against the pension fund, but it never paid back the interest. So this goes on for a few decades, and you realize that you owe the pension fund interest, and suddenly the taxpayers were taking a loan on the pension fund, which is my money in the fund as an employee. Well, before me, actually, the people before me, but it is, you know, my money in the system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this taxpayers have to pay back the money they borrowed from their the employees of the state and the city and the towns and the county. So what we've done over the years is when we have a budget crisis, we extend the deadline on filling up the pension fund to full amount. So that actually is an option on the table we're going to be having a conversation about letting municipalities, the county, and the state to push out their schedule to save them some money on unfunded liabilities.
Right.
So as opposed to fully funding like 2020, 2032, I think, or 2030, we could push it out like 3 years at the state level, for example. But it'll be subject to review by the State Retirement Board, PAREC, the PRIM, you know, all these agencies, and the Treasury does audit and oversight about all the pension programs in the state. And they'll probably be subject to some level of review. There's like two agencies, PRIM and PAREC, that looks at this stuff, right? I mean, that's how seriously we take looking at this. And also, we couldn't have anticipated this level of financial crises. Obviously, I keep saying over again, a recession coming. The State Treasurer's Office tells the state retirement system had already looked at recession projections and already started moving the pension investments around. Mm-hmm. It's a very diversified system. So it's not great, but it isn't like 2008 where we put way too much money in capital gains, you know, but the high-flying internet stocks as well as the banking industry and real estate. So the lessons learned from 08, they didn't do it a second time. But none of us could anticipate this current situation.
Right. As we said before, it's unprecedented, for sure. We talk a little bit, Tacky, about the census. I know that every time we've chatted, I think pretty much you're reminding folks to respond to the 2020 federal census. Any new information you can provide for us?
Sure. The U.S. Census complete count is to be done this October. Mm-hmm. We pushed up the deadline about a month to let more people do this. It is on the internet, 2020census.gov. You can put it on, you do it yourself. It takes about 10 minutes to do. And in the city of Quincy, we're about 60.9% as of my check this morning on the census website. You have like a complete count competition. So you can look at other communities. 52.6% of all census forms will be done on the internet. That's a very positive sign. In 2010, our response rate was 68.1%. So we're currently at 60.9%. The response rate at 2010 was 68.1%. Obviously, we'd like to get to 100% response rate. Massachusetts is at 61.7%. So we're closing in on the state average. So that's the average of the state. And nationally, the average is 59.69%. So we're slightly above the national average and slightly below the state average, which means, you know, everyone I ask, listen to this, please do your part. And if you have a family or friend or a neighbor who needs help because they have a technology challenge, you know, give them a call and you can use the website very easily, mm-hmm. As well as it's available in so many different languages now. So if you're unable to read or speak English, the information has languages in the bottom you can pick. And again, we won't ask for a Social Security number. We won't ask for your bank account. You do not have to pay anything. There is no financial requests. So, you know, none of, you know, anything involving any exchange of money, bank accounts, Social Security numbers. If you see that, obviously that's a scam. We're not, there is no phone banking looking for that information. So you're not hear a robocall or a human person telling you that we want money from you to do the census. It is not a paid service by you. And lastly, it is confidential. Federal law has been in place for many, many, many decades now that this information is private, confidential, and subject to actually federal crime. You go to federal jail for breaching census information at the personal level. So they can't find like Tacky Chan in your census information. So again, next 10 years of our lives is completely dependent on what you do today. Mm-hmm. And education, healthcare, transportation money they would get from the federal government, And it allows the state and municipal governments to project out birth rates, you know, death rates, aging population rates, migration rates of people, and so forth. And with this students not in Boston, not in Quincy right now, because they've been sent home, that's going to reduce our count. So anyone in your home on April 1st counts as a resident. Doesn't matter if it's a blood relative, doesn't matter who it is, as long as they're physically with you, including newborn children. You know, if you have new kids, they count towards the census.
Okay.
So, you know, please do fill out the census. Let's try to beat the 68.1% we did in 2010.
Yeah, the mayor mentioned parts of wards 2, 4, and 5. There's some lower turnouts. So he specifically targeted those to encourage folks to respond.
Yep, I had a chat with Nikki Crispo, the clerk, about this last week also. If you break it, if you go on the internet and you see, you can break it by census blocks. And then obviously, you know the streets inside a census block, you can figure out what neighborhoods we're talking about.
Interesting.
Quincy Center, with its new development, a lot of new people move in. Reaching those people are very important. Same in High Point. You know, parts of Germantown. Obviously, I'm very concerned about the senior housing complexes because we can go in.
Right.
Some have technology challenges. We'd like to bring them an iPad and say, hey, we're going to help you out.
Yep.
But you can do the census by telephone. That's why we encourage people to have a family member who does not have technology ability, go to 2020census.gov, learn how to, they have instructions on how to do it by telephone. They can help other people by calling them up and telling them what to do. You know, obviously there's some areas that are a lot of movement around, like the Brewer's Corner areas and census block. There's a lot of transient people in that area. So, you know, given stated today, and we can't door knock like we used to. I can't go in front of public meetings and visiting different folks and say, hey, this is important.
You please, right.
You know, as quick as you can. We're relying on you and social media and newsletters like the Housenik Bulletin was able to get out to try to get the word out.
Yep, and you know, the U.S. mail is still functioning, so you can just drop it in the mail too.
Yeah, absolutely, and you can, you know, get a form any number of ways. And like I said earlier, people have got at least 3 postcards already, and I'm sure there'll be more. And even on the Beechwood neighborhood blog, the census coordinator has been putting information up there. My Facebook, my website has also been putting up information. So I don't know what to do other than just driving around a neighborhood and just with a bullhorn, just make people mad at me. I'm running out of options here.
If you do that, take a video and send it to us. We want to see that, Jackie. What are you hearing from the House Speaker about when you'll be coming back to Beacon Hill, or are you?
Yeah, we got a notice from the Speaker this morning that we're going to continue to work from home for the moment. For those who've never visited my office in the State House, there's desks are less than 3 feet apart from each individual. We have up to 3 committees sometimes in the House. Come through the same doorway, the same waiting area. There's barely 10 or 15 feet space apart. My life is largely driven by meetings and trying to get the meetings on time, and you're always brushing past people. The elevators are very small. If you're average size people, you may squeeze 7 tightly into an elevator. And of course, it's a public building. So we normally have a lot of tourists, which are not happening right now. Our number 3 industry is going to be very troubled this year. But, you know, normally have a lot of tourists, students, general public walking through. It is a public building. Like, we get walks in all the time in my office. And my own employees, my staff, they take public transportation. They're like you and I. We have to go shopping. We have to get out. And, you know, we don't know if any of us can pick up this virus and transmit it to each other and then bring it home to our loved ones.
Right.
So right now, we're going to remain virtual. We ran a virtual hearing last week on Zoom. Use Google Docs to get people to send us testimony. We did a test run of one bill, fairly simple bill regarding price gouging to see how it would go. And I feel it's confident enough that I can do this again. Me and my co-chair will schedule some more hearings this way. We're doing Zoom meetings with the committee members. The House members are my responsibility. And we're bringing some guest speakers and updating on committee stuff. The staff is doing Zoom meetings and phone meetings with me 2-3 times a week and texting pretty much every other hour now on group text. And people who have clients, you know, lobbyists still have a job. you know, we arrange cell phone calls and then just email me your documents in advance. And I try to read everything, including all the COVID-19 stuff I'm reading, plus the constituent emails I'm reading, plus the committee documents I'm reading, you know, plus the bills that we're hopefully going to try to get done, like tomorrow's the information technology bond bill. So, you know, we're reading a lot of stuff. And then my other staff are reading that I can't read, and I have to get information from my staff and what they read so I can summarize what's going on there. So, yeah, so it's not like we're not working. We'll continue to move along. But the social distancing is a real problem. Entry to the building is always a line because we have to go through metal detectors. And the idea of, let's say, you know, 500-600 employees coming to the state house, 6 feet apart in a line to review entry on identification. And even if we go to electronic slap being identification, we need to take card to tap and run. You still have to have 6 feet apart. And then once you get to the office, you can get 6 feet apart. It's going to be a problem.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And, it, you know, another place that's going to be a problem when it gets back up to full speed is the MBTA. You know, no changes right now with this phase one, but eventually by the new normal, that's going to be an interesting predicament.
Well, like I said at the beginning, no shoes, no service, no masks. I mean, no shirt, no shoes, no mask, mm-hmm. no service.
Yep.
Mask is required to wear an MBTA. The MBTA staff is masks. The problem I think everyone's figured out is that you can't be sanitizing every single person that comes on and off the train.
Right.
I mean, it's just physically impossible. I mean, if you put a car full of people a train in, as soon as someone leaves, you got to clean it, then bring it back in. But not everybody's getting off at the same stop. And they can sanitize the trains way into the other side, but we all know that people complain there's not enough trains, it's taking too long, and so forth. So, but it takes time to clean these things up from one end to the other, including mm-hmm. the buses. So, you know, obviously I hear a lot of complaints, but you think about practically, I get on the train or the bus, and you have to sanitize as soon as I get off the train and the bus. Same thing on the ferries going to the islands. The problem is that when they get off the ferry, people on the other side waiting to get on right away.
Right.
It's not like an airplane. They can make you wait. People are not going to wait for that ferry. People are That's not right. going to wait for the tape. People are not going to wait for that bus while you clean it. At the airport, the airliners can go in and get the fog spray and just, you know, blitz the interior cabin and wait for the air out through the filtration system.
Mm-hmm.
But you're kind of trapped in the terminal. It's not like you can do anything about it.
Right.
You can't do it on public transit. And the governor and I agree that we should encourage people to stay home, try to see if business can do staggered entry to the office, if it's possible. But there's a revenue problem because of declining fares. People are not riding the T, but we still have to maintain the system, even though we're running on a shorter schedule. As we ramp up to new normal, we'll be returning to a more normal schedule. But even if it's not a lot of people on the T, you're going to have that fear about whether or not the T is safe. And I cannot tell people that it's not going to be 100% safe because you don't know who you're riding the team with.
The whole issue of energy use tacky is starting to become more evident now that more people are home more often and seeing their electric bills, myself included. It's a good opportunity, I think, to start to talk a little bit about ways to save and how we can address our energy use going forward.
Oh, yes. Your electric bills have hit your doorsteps. You realize you've consumed a lot of power more than last month, especially when you look at how much kilowatts you used from last year, because yes. We're working more, the kids are home more, you're using all electronic devices more, and we're coming up with summertime, and air conditioning is going to be used more at home. You know, the majority of us leave to go to the office, go to work. You're using someone else's air conditioning, and the electric grid is designed of past performance. So, they look at the energy usage in the past and use that to figure out how much energy usage in the future. Because of COVID-19, this has all changed. There is no prior history of having this many people work from home, this many kids not in school, and the change of energy consumption. And as a result, you're going to see an increase in your bill. So energy efficiency is now very important. I'm sure a vast majority of us have those strange light bulbs that are becoming more normal looking light bulbs. But again, turn off your power strips if you're not using it. If no one's watching TV or streaming during the day, make sure you turn that stuff off. I'm using my cell phone to talk to you because I do not have a camera on my computer. If I don't leave, if I don't put my charge on my phone and use the battery, I'm saving electricity because the charge time is actually fairly quick on new electronic devices. And when you take it off charge and use it like this, I'm not drawing power constantly. I'm drawing more power if you're doing that. And same thing on your circuit protectors, try to turn them off to try to save a little bit of power. So you might have to open your windows more to try to use less air conditioning, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
So this is not going to end anytime soon. And you know, everyone's going to see some real lifestyle adjustments, as particularly if you have financial challenges. It becomes even more imperative that as we move into the warmer months that you really pay attention not to turn on your lights all day, for example. Keep your windows open, keep your shades open on bright days, and try to use natural light, things like that. The telecom industry is stressed. We've been communicating with the cell phone companies as well as the cable companies. They don't see as much traffic at home. And you ask, I use a lot of internet work. Yes, but a lot of big businesses use dedicated lines.
Right.
So they have a whole phone system set up. They have dedicated lines of internet. The telecom industry knows they're there. They've set up systems for it. And they try to manage the traffic well that way. Even I now need more internet. I'm cheap, so I never had to get high end. But today, Comcast is coming because I need high internet because of things like Zoom.
Right.
The volume of documents I'm getting. So, you know, same thing on your cell phone, right? I've had a lot of drops. You may have had a lot of drops because there's a lot of traffic on. The last time I remember this type of situation was 9/11, where both the landlines and the cell phone lines were overwhelmed. Plus the combination of the New York cell phone towers going down made it very difficult for everyone to communicate with their friends and loved ones into that state as well.
Yep.
So, I mean, we've done this before. It's just that it's just bombarded. And 5G is coming. T-Mobile's one of the widest ones, but it's still in the works. And 5G phones are not cheap, I discovered. And I need a new cell phone. This poor guy's dying.
I'd be curious to see if this pushes us more toward renewable energy and, you know, green energy sources. I know that is part of the governor's plan, is to have a certain percentage of renewable energy to the state. I'm curious to see if that goes up even higher.
It's already moving forward. Hydro-Quebec project was something that we already state bidded into. The transmission line is in process of being constructed despite some obstacles going on in the state of Maine. The offshore wind projects are still moving forward. We bought into those big windmills that are going to be off of Block Island, Rhode Island, as well as up and down parts of the Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts deep water coastline. But that takes time to get done. And by 2024-ish, you're going to see more renewable power in the energy portfolio as those projects finish. But in terms, you know, biggest burning item is natural gas.
Yep.
Natural gas is a much cleaner fuel than oil or coal, which are basically almost gone out of our portfolio. It's not even a food percentage point of our portfolio in New England. But it is cleaner and it's safer, it's reliable. As we bring on other or more consistent renewables, especially hydro, we'll be diminishing our demand on natural gas. And if people use their electricity efficiently, meaning they not use as much, but try to conserve, that only helps us more, using more renewable and using less fossil fuels. But it's a gradual process. You have to build it. You don't build it, you don't have it. It's not difficult. I mean, don't have a new transmission line in Massachusetts, you don't. In New England, to put it in perspective, we eat about 49%-ish of all the power of the six New England states, just really? Massachusetts. We're just about half of all the energy consumption. So as a result, we don't have new build. So we don't have new power plants built as fossil fuels. And for us to get renewable power from other places, we have to build transmission lines through our neighboring states, which they don't like the idea of building a line just for us.
Right. I mean,
you don't want to build a line for somebody else.
Right.
Same principle. So it's still in the works. Those projects have not stopped. It just takes time to make it happen.
We'll talk a little bit. We've talked about this before, but I know it's an issue you're still concerned about is hate crimes, particularly when it comes to the COVID-19 crisis. And you've seen it happen here. You've seen it happen across the country. What are you hearing about that right now?
Well, the National Conference of State Legislators Asian Caucus met last week. And we had some presentations done out of New York and California. New York and California actually have the best data and some of the more proactive Asian American studies and data. And when I say Asian Americans, I don't just mean Chinese. I mean Japanese, Koreans, Indians, Pakistanis, Thai, Vietnamese, and so forth. And there is a rise of hate crime and hate speech specifically against Chinese, but also into the broader Asian American community. And this is a trend we're all seeing in other states. And it's about good data collection, whether or not the state's collecting good hate crime data, whether they're actually being prosecuted. This is not equally applied at the state level. Every state has a different hate crime law. Every state implements it on their separately. The feds can only do so much. In Houston, the FBI already announced a warning about a spike in hate crimes against Asian Americans. I know that we've communicated with the community affairs liaison. These are people who do education awareness about hate crimes and scams and things like that for the FBI. They're aware of the situation as well. And we're kind of on the lookout. And again, like we said earlier, you know, see something, say something, definitely see something, say something. To the local police, if you're unsatisfied with the local police, you know, you have the state police, you have the district attorney's office and others to report it and determine whether or not that is a hate crime. Some are very subtle. Denial of services is a big one. They won't let you in the store. Clear discrimination, not using services owned by other folks is not a clear discrimination, but it's a sign there's a problem. For example, Chinatown, that saw well into a 75 to 85% decline in business in January. Not even the pandemic. Before the pandemic, they already saw a 75 to 85% decline in business because of fear. And even local businesses here had in Quincy had suffered a decline in business because of the January news about a strange and new disease coming out of China. So people's behavior has adjusted that because for some reason they think a disease is somehow tied to race, which is not. The presumption is that we've all been in China in the last, you know, 2 weeks before during the disease. That is clearly false. Not all been there. And they get, you know, let these fears, misconceptions take hold. And despite work by the medical community, despite people like myself, and this is Asian American Pacific Islander Month still, to try to get more awareness out there, it's been hard. And Senator Warren, we're very thankful for Senator Warren in D.C., in the Senate, you know, pushing for more investigations about hate crimes against Asian Americans. Congresswoman Grace Ming from New York has resolutions pending in the Judiciary Committee to denounce hate crimes and encourage more vigilance among us as citizens, and also more vigilance with local and federal law enforcement to keep an eye on these things. And of course, you got social media. I mean, people are more than welcome to look at any organization on Twitter or Facebook, any of the social media you read and the information they put out. And it can be very true.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to touch on today, Tacky? We covered quite a bit, actually.
Well, we can do a cooking show next, I suspect.
You're going to show us how to make your peanut butter and jelly?
Yeah, over a podcast. I'll make you hear the scraping of toast. we could do that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I just want to emphasize at the close, and you know, I know I'm repeating myself three ways, and we'll see top of the census, but the state of mercy is not over. Let make it very clear. Boston, the state of mercy is active the June 1st. So Boston businesses would not be following the immediate guidelines by the governor over the past 2 weeks. It is up to us to remain vigilant regarding our own health, protecting ourselves and others, and ensuring that we have a safe environment to work in and safe place to spend our money. We've talked to local restaurants and alcohol and service industries last week. Anywhere there's a tourist area, any business that's in a workplace-dependent area, like a financial sector, for example, in Boston, financial district, anywhere near a college town, those businesses are going to have probably extremely high non-reopening rate. So the rough estimate is approximately 30% of all restaurants and bars and retail may not open doors statewide. However, certain geographic regions, that number is going to be extraordinarily higher because of the customers they serve. And this is not just here, but this is nationally. And this will impact your neighbors and your friends and impact the state, not just in tax dollars, but we got to provide these services. So, you know, everybody in Harvard Square, Boston College, the downtown Boston, Downtown Crossing, Financial District, places we need tourism, Salem, Quincy, Plymouth, you know, big tourist locations. October is leaf peeping. So people come in to see changing leaves. We take it for granted, but a lot of people don't. They fly in just to see that. That means the Berkshires, you know, New Hampshire, Vermont, you know, all that income. You know, UMass and Amherst, you know, Holyoke, Smith, those communities depend on those schools. They're going to have probably delayed openings. So there's going to be a lot of the sectors all over the state on businesses, both retail and restaurants and service industry. That's three, not both, in the speaking today. We're going to be very much impacted. And that's why we always keep emphasizing, the government emphasizes the importance of this phased opening.
Yep.
If the data shows a massive spike, none of us wants to go back into not going back to work because we don't take care of ourselves to ensure we can go to work.
Right.
Because if there's a massive turnaround, there's a hotspot someplace, and find out that employees and customers are not behaving to try to keep each other safe, that only sets all of us back. And I think that's important, in my view. Only we can keep ourselves keeping moving forward individually to work as a group together.
Okay. So we have control over our destiny to some extent, at least.
We do have more control. I know we don't feel like we have control. I know it's hard. Because we're dealing with a virus.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm in that same feeling. But we do have some control. We have control over the fact of how we try to protect ourselves and others when we leave our homes. So I get it. I really do. And I feel the same way as everyone else. But, you know, again, I can't emphasize that importance over and over again. You know, only the people that can beat the virus is us.
Folks want to reach out to you, some good ways for them to do that, Tacky?
Yes, 617-722-1. I almost used the Senate number because I worked with Michael Morrissey for so long. I almost said 149-6. Yeah, we've reached that point. 617-722-2014. 617-722-2014.
Okay.
You can hit any of the staffers. We do check our voicemail very regularly, all the time now, and you get someone, Tacky.chan, T-A-C-K-E-Y, my name, .chan, at mahouse.gov, so that's mahouse.gov. You can email me. Again, my email box is busted open again and overloaded, so if we get bounced back, it's because people sent me like 10 megabyte documents overnight when I'm sleeping, which is now happening. So, you know, we encourage you to do that. If, like I say, get a bounce back emails because my people have been sending me big documents. So okay. You can try it again or just leave a message, even whatever hour you leave a message, we'll get back to you.
Okay.
Please do not do social media. We are once again encouraging people not to just Facebook message me or send a comment out because it's very hard to catch those as we're trying to respond to people's phone calls and emails.
Sure. Great to talk to you. Be well, and I think next time we chat, I'll be back in studio. So, but that won't change. We'll still have to communicate this way for the time being, at least.
Yeah, no, maybe we'll have high speed internet by then.
That'll be good. We can see you in high definition.
Exactly. We'll have a more of a video call as opposed to just listening to me misspeak on the podcast. You can see me misspeak.
Thanks again, Tacky. Be well.
You too. Be well. Be safe. Thank you.